Shalom Aleichem. Welcome to Jewish Short Stories from Eastern Europe and Beyond. I'm Leonard Nimoy. This 13-part series features many of the best Jewish stories of the past 150 years, written in English or translated from Russian, Hebrew, or Yiddish. Directed by Joan Micklin Silver, our readers include some of the finest performers of stage, screen, and television: Alan Alda, Lauren Bacall, Claire Bloom, Elliot Gould, Walter Matthau, and many more. The 32 stories in our series may at first seem rather diverse, if not incongruous. They were, after all, written in different languages, at different times, in different countries, and with very different literary styles. Some do not even concern themselves with explicitly Jewish subjects. But as you listen, I think you'll agree that all have this in common. Written by Jewish authors, they somehow reflect a sensibility, a voice, a worldview born of 1,000 years of Jewish life and culture in Central and Eastern Europe. And whether through humor, tragedy, or, as is more often the case, equal measures of both, they struggle with a common question. What does it mean? What can it possibly mean to live as a Jew in the modern world? Today we offer two stories, The King by Isaac Babel and Gimple the Fool by Isaac Basheva Singer. Both stories are portraits of their title characters, two very different personalities who nonetheless share this in common. They both stand at the fringe of the traditional Jewish community. We begin with The King. The King by Isaac Babel introduces one of the most outrageous characters in all of Jewish literature. Benya Crick, the Jewish gangster. The undisputed boss of the Odessa underworld, given to wearing diamond bracelets and orange-colored suits, audacious and daring Benya is never at a loss when the moment calls for criminal action. Though written in Russian, Babel's raffish and coolly observed tale is nonetheless suffused with an unmistakable taste of Yiddishkeit. The King by Isaac Babel. Our reader is Jeff Goldblum.
The wedding ceremony was over. The rabbi sank into an armchair. Then he got up again and walked out into the courtyard, where he saw that a row of tables had been set up across it. The row was so long, in fact, that its tail stuck out through the gate into Hospital Street. The tables with their velvet covers twisted across the courtyard like a snake with multicolored patches on it, and those bright red and yellow velvet patches seemed to sing in loud, cheerful voices. Every room had been turned into a kitchen. Through the sooty, grimy doorways, the drunken, swollen flames of fires could be seen. Old women's faces, trembling chins, and greasy bosoms basked in their smoky rays. Sweat, pink as blood, as the foam round the mouth of a rabid dog, bathed the overdeveloped bulk of their sweetly stinking human flesh. Three cooks, assisted by several dishwashers, were preparing the wedding feast under the supreme command of 80-year-old Razel, tiny and hunchbacked and traditional as the scrolls of the Torah. Just before the feast began, a young man, unknown to the guests, came into the yard and said he had to speak to Benya Crick. He took Benya aside. "Listen, King," the young man said, "I'd like to have a couple of words with you. I was sent by Aunt Hannah, you know, from Kostetsky Street." "So," said Benya Crick, alias the King, "what's this couple of words about?" "Aunt Hannah told me to tell you that there's a new police chief at the precinct station." "I've known that since the day before yesterday," Benya said. "So?" "He called in all the cops and made a speech." "A new broom sweeps clean," Benya said. "So he wants to make a raid. What else?" "And maybe you know when this raid is to be for?" "It's for tomorrow." "It's for today, King." "Who told you that, kid?" "Aunt Hannah. Do you know her?" "I know Aunt Hannah." What else?
The new chief called the cops together and made them that speech. We, he says, must strangle that guy Crick because, he says, there's no room for no king in this country since we already have a czar. So today, he says, when Crick is marrying off his sister and all of them will be there, is the best moment for a raid.
Go on.
Well, the cops hear that and they begin to get cold feet. They try to explain to him that if they make that raid during his sister's wedding, Benny will be real mad at them and a lot of people are liable to get hurt. But the new fella says my self-respect is more important to me.
And what shall I tell Aunt Hannah? I mean, concerning the tip-off about the raid, King.
Tell her that Benya got her tip-off about the raid.
And so the young man left.
Three of Benya's friends followed him. They said they'd be back in half an hour, and in half an hour they were back. And that's all there was to it. The guests weren't seated according to age. An old fool is just as contemptible as a timorous youth. Nor were they seated according to riches. A heavy purse is lined with tears. The bride and her groom sat in the place of honor. It was their day. Next to them sat Sender Eichbaum, the king's father-in-law. That was his right. Sender Eichbaum's story is worth telling, because it's no ordinary story. How did Benya Crick, hold-up man and king of gangsters, become Eichbaum's son-in-law? How did he become the son-in-law of a man owning 60 cows, all except one of which gave milk? It all started with a hold-up. Only a year before, Benya had written Eichbaum a letter. Mr. Eichbaum, please have the kindness to slip 20,000 rubles under the gate at 17 Sophia Street tomorrow morning. If you don't do this, you can expect something unheard of, something that all Odessa will talk about. Yours respectfully, Benya the King. Three letters, each more explicit than the last, remained unanswered. Then Benya acted. They came at night, nine men carrying long poles. The ends of the poles were wrapped in pitch-dipped tow. Nine flaring stars were lighted in Eichbaum's yard. Benya knocked the locks off the cowshed and started leading the cows out one by one. A fellow with a knife was waiting for them. He knocked each cow over and plunged the knife into its heart. In the puddles of blood, the reflections of the torches looked like fiery roses. Then some shots resounded. Benya was firing to keep away the dairymaids who had come running toward the shed. Then the other gangsters started firing into the air, because if one doesn't fire into the air, someone may get killed. After the sixth cow, mooing her last, had fallen at the king's feet, Eichbaum appeared in the courtyard. He wore nothing but his underpants, and he inquired, "What's the point of this, Benya?" "If I don't have that money, Mr. Eichbaum, you don't have no cows. That's clear like 2 plus 2, right?" "Come inside the house, Benya." And inside the house, they came to an agreement. The slaughtered cows were divided 50-50. Eichbaum was given a written guarantee that he and what belonged to him would not be interfered with anymore. There was even a seal affixed to the document, but the miracle came later. That dreadful night when the knifed cows bellowed and their calves slipped and slid in maternal blood, when the torches danced like black maidens and the dairymaids screamed under the muzzles of the playful Browning guns, Celia, old Eichbaum's daughter, suddenly appeared in the middle of the yard. She wore a very low-cut nightgown, and this turned the king's victory into a defeat. 2 days later, without any explanation, the money Benya had taken from him was returned to Eichbaum, and soon afterward Benya came to pay him a social visit. On this occasion, Benya wore an orange-colored suit, and under his shirt cuff shone a bracelet studded with diamonds. He entered the room, greeted Eichbaum, and asked him for his daughter Celia's hand. The old man suffered a slight stroke. But he recovered. He was still good for another 20 years or so. "Look here, Eichbaum," the king told him. "When you die, I'll have you buried in the main Jewish cemetery, right by the entrance gate. I'll have a pink marble monument erected for you, Eichbaum. I'll make you an elder of Brodsky Synagogue. I'll give up my profession, Eichbaum, and enter your business as a partner. We'll have 200 cows, Eichbaum. I'll kill all the dairy farmers except you. No thief will ever walk down the street on which you live. I'll build you a villa out by the 16th streetcar stop. And then you must remember, too, Eichbaum, that you weren't no rabbi either when you were a young man. Who, for instance, has forgotten that will? Well, let's not go into it, especially when we're talking aloud, right? And your son-in-law will be none other than the king, not some pale, snotty character." And Benya had his way, because he was a passionate man, and passion rules the world. The newlyweds spent 3 months in the rich land of Bessarabia, wallowing among grapes, rich food, and amorous sweat. Then Benya had to return to Odessa to marry off his 40-year-old sister, Devoira, who was afflicted with a goiter. Now, having told Sender Eichbaum's story, we can rejoin Devoira Crick's wedding party. At the wedding feast, the guests were served turkey, roast chicken, goose, gefilte fish, and a fish soup on which floated lakes of lemon juice that shone like mother-of-pearl when they caught the light. The flowers adorning the dead heads of the geese swayed gently in the evening breeze like gorgeous plumes. But do you think roast chickens are cast up on the beach by Odessa's foamy surf just like that? The most exalted, smuggled goods, everything that's famed from one end of the earth to the other, contributed their enchanting and disruptive bit on that blue, starry night. Imported wines warmed stomachs and turned legs pleasantly into pasteboard, dulled brains and evoked belches that sounded like trumpets summoning the guests to battle. The Negro cook of the Plutarch, which had put in 3 days earlier from Port Said, brought through the customs barrier a number of pot-bellied bottles of Jamaica rum and velvety Madeira, cigars from the plantations of Pierpont Morgan, and some cases of oranges from the outskirts of Jerusalem. That's the sort of thing that's thrown ashore by Odessa's foamy surf and occasionally comes the way of Odessa's beggars at Jewish weddings. Jamaica rum came their way at Devoira Crick's wedding, and they gulped down all they could, just like a lot of treif pigs, and started banging with their crutches. Eichbaum unbuttoned his waistcoat, surveyed the tempestuous gathering with puckered eyes, and hiccuped lovingly. The band sounded a fanfare. It was just as at a military parade, nothing but fanfares. The gangsters, sitting in compact rows, seemed at first somewhat intimidated by the presence of outsiders. But gradually they loosened up. Leova Katsap broke a bottle of vodka over the head of his ever-loving wife. Monya the Trigger fired into the air. But the climax of enthusiasm was reached, in accordance with custom, when the guests started presenting their gifts to the newlyweds. Synagogue shamuses leaped on the tables, and to the accompaniment of the bubbly fanfares, sang out the number of rubles and silver spoons presented to the bride. On this occasion, the king's friends demonstrated what it means to have blue blood, and also that the spirit of gallantry was not dead in Odessa's Moldovanka district. Nonchalantly, they threw gold coins, bracelets, and strings of coral on the silver trays that were carried around for that purpose. Moldovanka's aristocrats were encased in strawberry waistcoats. Their shoulders were hugged by rust-colored jackets. Azure leather creaked on their fleshy feet. Drawing themselves up and sticking out their bellies, the gangsters clapped in time to the music, shouted cheers, and threw flowers at the bride, while Devoira Crick, the 40-year-old sister of the king, disfigured by disease, with her swollen goiter and her eyes popping out of their sockets, sat on a pile of cushions next to a puny boy, bought with Eichbaum's money, and now dumbfounded by despair. The ceremony was drawing to a close. The shamuses were hoarse, and the double bass was clashing with the violin. Suddenly, a slight smell of burning spread over the yard. Benya's father, an old carter with a reputation for uncouthness, even among the carters, said to his son, "Know what? I think the chimney's on fire, Benya!" "Pa," the king told his drunken parent, "please eat, drink, and all that. Don't let that crap worry you." And Papa Crick followed his son's advice. He ate and drank, but the cloud of smoke became more ominous. Here and there, the edges of the sky were growing pink. And then a narrow tongue of flame shot up into the air. Men rose and started sniffing the air. Women squealed. The gangsters exchanged glances. Only Benya, who hadn't noticed a thing, shouted reproachfully, "You're spoiling my party. Please, friends, eat, drink." But just then, the same young man appeared in the yard who had spoken to Benya at the beginning of the evening. "King," he said, "I must have a couple of words with you." "Go ahead," Benya said. "You always seem to have a couple of words." "King," the unknown young man said, starting to titter, "it's very funny, King. The police station is burning, just like a candle." The shopkeepers were stunned. The gangsters snorted. Manya, the 60-year-old founding mother of the local gang, put two fingers in her mouth and whistled so stridently that everyone around her jumped. "Manya, remember you're not on duty today," Benya observed. "Take it easy, Manya." The young man who had brought the stunning piece of news was still being shaken by uncontrollable titters. 40 of them came out of the station," he said, his jaws trembling. "They were all set for that raid, but they hadn't gone 50 yards when it caught fire. You should run over there and see how it's burning." But Benya forbade the guests to leave to see the fire. He himself went with two of his friends. The station was burning merrily on all four sides. The cops, their hindquarters jouncing, were rushing up and down the smoke-filled staircase and tossing boxes out of the windows. In the confusion, citizens who had been arrested earlier that evening were taking to their heels. The firemen were full of zeal, but they found there was no water in the nearest hydrant. The new police chief, the new broom who was to sweep clean, stood on the sidewalk, crossed the street, biting the ends of his mustache, which kept getting into his mouth. The new broom was motionless. Passing near him, Benya gave him a military salute. "Good evening, Your Excellency. How's your health?" Benya asked sympathetically. "What do you say to this terrible fire? It's a regular nightmare." Then the king looked fixedly at the blazing building, shook his head, smacked his lips, and said, "Ay, ay, ay." When Benya returned home, the candles and the lanterns in the courtyard were already sputtering out, and in the sky there was a hint of dawn. The guests had left, and the musicians were dozing, leaning their heads on the necks of their bass fiddles. Only Dvoira was in no hurry to go to sleep. With both hands, she was pushing her reluctant husband toward the door of their nuptial chamber. She looked at him carnivorously, like a cat holding a mouse in its jaws and testing it lightly with its teeth.
That was The King, written by Isaac Bobble and read by Jeff Goldblum. The story appears in Lyubka the Cossack and Other Stories by Isaac Bobble, translated from the Russian by Andrew R. McAndrew, and is used by permission of the translator. You're listening to Jewish Short Stories from Eastern Europe and Beyond, a co-production of the National Yiddish Book Center and public radio station KCRW, Santa Monica. The full 13-hour series is available on cassette from the National Yiddish Book Center. For information, call 1-800-9-SERIES, 1-800-973-9973.